the Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
Greetings, and I'm John Loeffler. Our guest this week is Yolanda York from the Social Security Administration, discussing things every woman should know about Social Security, give you an idea about what questions you need to be asking about your Social Security retirement. You know, I hope you had a chance to follow our last weekend show. We discussed what is indeed an historic time period. We are living in the era of lowest interest rates in the last, 300 to 500 years, something like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing, John. We used to talk about Japan, their low interest rates, or the lowest interest rates we'd seen in half a century. What we're seeing now is the lowest interest rates we've seen since the founding of the Bank of England. 300-year lows in England, 500-year lows in Germany. It's just absolutely incredible. And that's why we're going to be devoting much of what we're talking about today, how you survive in this kind of environment.
I just want to know where I can sign up for 0% loans. Can I get a 0% mortgage? No, I'm serious. Wait a minute.
No, it's even better. If you're a government, imagine this. I borrow money from you, John, but then you have to pay me interest. I'm borrowing money from you and you pay me interest. That's what's happening today on almost 10 to 15% of sovereign bonds. You actually get less money back when your bond comes due. The government's borrowing money from you and you're paying them for the privilege. How's that, folks?
Well, you know, can you see that as an ad campaign? Hurry, 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 get nothing for something. You know, instead of something for nothing. I don't know. It is. It's a very, very strange time. So here's the problem. If you're in this 0% environment, and if you're headed into retirement, and here's a clue, all of you are in one way or another at various stages, or if you're near retirement and you're having a hard time, especially depending on your investments for income, today's show is a follow-up to our weekend show last weekend. So if you're interested in this subject, you need to go back and listen to last weekend's program on this whole thing. Here are some practical steps to help you navigate in an environment of 0% rates to help you make it through retirement. There is a basic fact, and that the basic fact is the cost of living is going up, and that's due largely to inflation. It's been doing that for quite a long time, and you have to factor that in to your planning. With medical advances, as a matter of fact, people who are retiring are living longer, and they're depending on investments for a longer time frame. So, Jim, here we are. We're in this, zero boom environment. How do you survive on an investment basis or maybe even profit from it?
It's amazing, John, because if you take a look at the environment that we're living in right now, just throw out everything you heard about planning for retirement, the type of plans, the pie charts, the assumptions that were made. I don't care if it was living, for example, the 4% rule, which was basically, let's say that the average person retired was expected to live 25 years in retirement. So the 4% rule was, let's say if you had $100,000, if you took out 4% a year, that would last you 25 years. That was one of the big standards that came into the planning process when we were looking at retiring. That doesn't work in this kind of environment where you have basic cost of living going up, but you also have interest rates at the lowest they've been in nearly, 500 years. So the asset allocation mixes no longer make sense. I mean, take a look at the last 15 years. If we take a look at the year 2000, I could have got 6.8% on a 10-year treasury. Today, it's 2%. 15 years ago, I could have got 6.9% on a 2-year treasury note. And the reason that's higher is back in 2000, the Fed was in the process of raising interest rates. So you had a inverted yield curve. So 6.9%, that same 2-year treasury note is 0.6%. And believe it or not, folks, it was down to below 0.3% just a short while ago. So if you began the century in bond funds, things like TLT, you would have seen your income decline steadily every single year. That wasn't supposed to happen. You were supposed to go into something that was predictable. You could live on the income. You knew what it was going to be. When you take a look at it, that's not the way things actually turned out. So, and not to mention the fact, we've had two bear markets in the last 13 years, and the stock market was flat from the year 2000 until April of 2013. It virtually went nowhere. So we've seen interest come down. We've seen stock prices come down. The dividends have come down in bond funds, which were the popular vehicle used in retirement planning. So once again, John, throw the old rules out. They don't work in this kind of environment.
You know, it's interesting when you say 300 to 500 years. I mean, we're almost going back to the time the Italians invented double entry bookkeeping, you know, it's going back that it has this historic sound to it. But really, in seriousness, I really think the financial crisis altered people's opinions of stocks. I wonder if it did it like this back in 1929, because as you and your guests point out, the public has been moving into various bond funds, despite the stock market going up more than 120% since 2009. As a matter of fact, there's always the gentleman that I talk to at the gym quite regularly, and he was asking me, well, what do you do? And I said, well, the stock market's doing great. And he says, well, I got some of them in bonds, and I've got some of it over here in treasuries, and I've got some in stocks. And I said, you know, you realize you're going backwards in those cash type instruments, because not only are you not making anything, inflation is chewing up what you're making. He said, yeah, but I sleep better at night. Yeah. And I said, well, I sleep better too. I have somebody manage my money for me. But that's the attitude that he's presenting, Jim, is that he sleeps better at night. So he'd rather lose money because he's going to sleep better. I mean, you have to think about that. How are you coping with this environment, especially when you have your clients? Because I'm sure your clients walk through the door with the same concerns.
We've had to customize, John, a lot of what we do today. I mean, you have to adapt to the needs of the client. You know, there's so many different situations today, depending on the financial situation that exists. I mean, some of the things that we're doing today that we didn't even look at this 15 years ago when rates were much higher. People are working longer, so they're taking, instead of retiring at age 62, they're waiting to age 66 to retire at full retirement benefits from Social Security because they need that extra income. A lot of people are choosing to do part-time work as part of their retirement plan. We're seeing tax inversions where people are moving out of high tax, high cost of living states like California. And we're doing a lot more customization of portfolios. I mean, you just can't follow that cookie cutter approach and formulas because they don't work in today's environment.
Well, I know you've been an ardent proponent of dividend performing stocks. In the last 4 years, you've been recommending blue chips that are dividend payers. Blue chips have done well in this environment. So given that, I mean, if you're reality adjusted to where the world is right now, why don't more advisors and or investors use that approach when it seems to be a fairly savvy one?
I mean, it takes a lot more effort to do that. I mean, a lot of times you have these sort of robo plans, standard questionnaires. You fill out, I'm age this, I plan to retire 5 years from now or 10 years from now. And then they come up with a pie chart and you get 16 different flavor funds and it goes into a sample pie. And that's pretty much the way the financial world works. And a lot of individuals and especially advisors use mutual funds and ETFs. It's okay until you get into the next bear market. Nobody, and I mean very few people, thought that we would go through two bear markets, extensive as they were, and especially the last one, which was a severe financial crisis, that we would have two of those in a period of 8 years. And so, you know, these pie charts work great until all of a sudden you have a financial crisis the way we did between 2007 and 2009. And quite frankly, John, how many people even in 2000 thought we were in a bear market? So, and the other thing is you take a look at where we are today. As we covered on the weekend program, we're witnessing the lowest interest rates we've seen in 300 to 500 years. And it's probably going to stay that way for the balance of the decade. I just don't see the Fed raising interest rates aggressively. I just don't think that's going to work in this kind of environment. It may be gradual. They may raise it a couple times, pause for a long time. But we're certainly going to be in a low interest rate environment for quite some time. And the other thing that I think that really strikes me about this, for the first time in my career, stocks are paying higher yields than bond funds. When I got started in the business in 1980, treasuries were at 15.5% and stock dividends were 7%. And bonds were offering almost 2.5 times what you could get on dividends from a stock. Today, we've got treasury yields less than 2%. We've got the S&P yielding close to what a 10-year treasury yields. And we've got the Dow offering a yield of over 2.2%, actually more than what you can get in a 10-year treasury. And more importantly, those dividends have been going up at 8 to 10% a year. You buy a 10-year treasury and invest in that, hold it for 10 years, you're going to get 2%. You're going to get 2% 10 years from now. Where if you have a Dow stock, the chances are your yield will almost be double or 2.5 times what it is today. So blue chip stocks, you take, you know, your average Dow stock. I don't care if it's, you're looking at Intel, Walmart. A lot of these companies are offering dividend yields in the 2-3% range going up at 8 to 10% a year. That means your income doubles every 7 to 10 years. It's not going to happen with a bond. It's going to stay flat. And worse, with bond funds, we've seen a lot of people actually seeing their income decline, as we'll discuss in one of our case studies today, over the last 10, 15 years, because that's exactly what's happened to interest rates.
Well, all right, here we are, though, in this environment, and your clients are going to want you to design portfolios because they're looking towards retirement. How are you designing their portfolios when you're trying to cope with 0% rates?
You know, I think a lot depends on the client size and the income sources. You know, if they don't have enough assets, we're having to use something like an immediate annuity and create the equivalent of a pension plan because you need sources of secure income. We're also using things like the dividend aristocrats because we need an increasing source of income. How are you going to pay for future cost of living? And one of the things that we have found is when people retire, usually when they initially retire, their expenses go up. You know, maybe they're joining a country club. There may be involving a move. They're doing a lot more travel, catching up on travel now that they have the free time. And then things sort of taper off after a while. Then they start to escalate again as you get into your 70s when you're paying more and more for medical. As we have talked on this program so many times, the average couple age 65 will shell out almost $250,000 for medical expenses during their retirement lifetime.
You know, that's an amount you just don't think about, you know, when you think about medical stuff. It's really interesting how large that can be. Okay, you know, you were talking about dividend aristocrats. How do you find these companies? And if you're looking for them, they must have characteristics. What do they look like?
Most are listed on the major stock exchanges, whether you're looking at Europe, U.S. or Asia. And what makes up a dividend aristocrat, the definition of one, is a company that has increased their dividend for 25 consecutive years. Example would be, you know, we often talk about it on the show, Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola just increased its dividend a little over a week ago. They increased it by 8% to 33 cents a share. That's the 53rd consecutive dividend hike by Coca-Cola. That kind of consistency is what makes an aristocrat. And when you find them, you want to own them and hold on to them, especially in retirement, when you're looking for a dependable source of income.
Well, as we discuss this segment, it's a very, very difficult environment for retirees. And I remember back when my father was setting up, and my father was an accountant, lifelong accountant, and he was setting up my mother for the provision after he might pass away. And he was able to do it very easily, as you know, by putting money into treasuries and other areas. It's a very difficult environment. Interest rates at zero. They're likely to remain that way for a long time. And even if they bump off of zero, they're not going to be that great. It is not just the United States where we're experiencing that. It is a global phenomenon. So how are you going to derive income that you need on a regular basis? Let's assume I'm retired, for example. If I need this income stream that comes in, that enables individuals to survive when we are bound to zero interest rates.
I mean, there's plenty of places to find income today, but you need to start with, for example, what is your age, your objectives, and what is your risk tolerance? Certain people are just not going to have a large percentage of their portfolio in stocks because they don't like the market or they've had bad experiences or the risk tolerance. Another thing has to do with age, obviously. And here's one of the myths about retirement planning. As you age, you should have more in fixed income. They found in studies you should have more in stocks because when you start getting into your 70s, or at least blue chip stocks, your income needs are going to start to increase as you run into medical expenses. You may run into a situation where you have a two household residence where one spouse is in a retirement home and the other well spouse is still living in the home. So you're maintaining two households. How are you going to pay for all that? And so It's just not a cookie cutter type approach. And you need to have a secure source of income. So obviously, if you have Social Security, you have a company pension, government pension, that leaves a lot more room of flexibility of where to look. It also depends, John, on the amount of assets. So before proceeding, you really have to have a clear understanding of that person's financial risk and financial situation. Then you design the portfolio to meet the needs and goals. So you have to begin with a plan. You've got to ask questions. You really have to understand, and sometimes you run into situations where both spouses have different viewpoints on money. One might be conservative, another one aggressive. You have a lot of situations today where the husband may be 6-8 years older than his wife, and women tend to live longer than men, so you have a 10 to 15 year age span longevity difference. That needs to be incorporated into the plan, because it's more likely if you have a wife that is much, much younger than yourself, given the fact that she's a woman, she already automatically has a longer lifespan. And the fact that if she's younger, you need to incorporate that into the plan. How is her needs going to be taken care of should you pass on? So a lot of these things are really incorporated in the planning process. And you can look at several areas. I mean, you can look at consumer staple stocks. They have dividend yields of 3% growing at 7-10% a year. Utilities, 3.5-4% growing at 4-5. MLPs, 4-6% yields growing at 6-8. Large pharmaceutical companies, 3% dividends growing at 4-5%, or real estate investment trusts paying 5% and growing at 5% a year. And then also, as a result of what we've seen happen to the energy sector, dividend-paying energy stocks, we can find yields that range from 3-6% with growth rates of 5-10%. So the idea is to stay with things that people use, because you obviously want to be a lot more conservative in the type of stocks you own, and the companies you own should be less subject to the vagaries of the economy.
All right. Well, we've got these alternatives. If we're using them, if we're applying that field, what kind of yield can you get, especially if you're looking for something like predictable outcomes?
Well, I mean, the portfolio income can range anywhere from 3-5% today, I think, is a safe figure to look at. Obviously, the higher the yield, the less that you're going to get in growth of dividends. You know, if you're looking at 3% yields, normally you're going to find 6-10% dividend growth. If you're looking at a 4% dividend yield, normally you're probably going to look at 4, 5, maybe 6% dividend growth. But the returns are twice what you're getting in bond yields. And more important, with that kind of income and that kind of growth, your income is going to double every 7-10 years. That's what you need.
How has this worked out in the last 5, 10, 15 years? There's been a period of volatility here. Obviously, we had a major crisis and two bear markets and zero bound interest rates. So if that's the strategy, how well has it worked?
You know what I'm going to do, John, is I'm going to give three examples here. We're going to use different kind of companies and to give you some kind of idea of what would have happened had you started your retirement, let's say in the year 2000. And it's going to illustrate the concept, because what did we see in the last 15 years? Well, we saw the bursting of the tech bubble. We saw a recession in 2001, the attacks in 9/11, $150 oil prices, a financial crisis, a second bear market in stocks, and 0% interest rates. So we've seen a financial crisis, ZERP. And so we've seen a number of things that most people, none of this stuff was in the rule books when you were looking at retirement planning, if you're retired or you were planning your retirement. So I'm going to give three examples, but it'll illustrate the point we're trying to get here. And the first example I'm going to give is Exxon. And what we did is we assumed that January 1, 2000, you had $10,000, you put it in Exxon. Exxon stock was selling around $38 a share. You would own 265 shares of Exxon with your $10,000. Now in 2000, Exxon's dividend was 88 cents. In 2015, Exxon's dividend is $2.92. So the dividend is up 3.3 times, or roughly 232%. Now, Exxon increased their dividend every single year from 2000. So it's one of the dividend aristocrats. The stock price is up 137%. The dividend income was up 232%.
Well, now I assume some of the other examples had similar results. But, you know, it's important to point out when you do this, you have to know that there are times when stocks are down, when the market drops. But what you're saying is, despite the fact that there are ups and downs, your trend line is still up. Dividends went up every single year in the last 15 years.
And it's not just that they went up, John. A dividend aristocrat raises dividends every year. They raise them in bull markets. They raise them in bear markets. They do it when the economy is booming, when the economy is weakening, or for that matter, when we are in recession. And we had two recessions in the last decade, as well as two bear markets. I want to give two more examples of this, but I think after these two examples, it's going to drive home the point. The next company I want to take is Coca-Cola. We often talk about this on the program. In 2000, January 1st, you could have bought Coca-Cola at $27 a share, so your 10,000 would have bought 370 shares. In 2000, Coke's dividend was 34 cents. In 2015, they just raised it again. It's $1.32. So Coke's dividend is up almost fourfold, or up 288%. The stock price is up 56%. And one more company I'll throw out here, and I'm using big Dow stocks here, Procter & Gamble. $10,000 in Procter & Gamble. January of 2000, you would have got it around $53 a share. You would have owned roughly about 190 shares. In 2000, Procter & Gamble's dividend was 64 cents. 2015, it was $2.60, up nearly fourfold as well. The dividend was up 306%. And the stock price was up 62%. Now, you got to remember, and a lot of people say, well, gosh, that stock price isn't up that much. That includes two bear markets where the market was down 45% or more. And despite that, the dividends went up every single year, where the income went up anywhere from 230% to 300%. John, that is how you make it through retirement. Basic expenses are going up every year. Once again, your expenses in retirement, you'll find they're almost like they're sandwiched. They're heavily loaded up front during the early years of retirement. You're doing a lot more travel, spending money on maybe, you know, you buy a motor home, you move to another location, you join a club, but, you know, your health is with you, so you're doing a lot more traveling. And then in the latter years, you're spending a lot more money on medical expenses or incapacity or disability.
Yeah, there are a number of issues that we've been addressing here on the program today. The one most important thing you can recognize is that we live in a different environment today in this current world. The old standard rules, especially for stocks and bonds, don't apply. The old rules did not fit for a world where there was 0% interest rates. And you need to always understand the rules are designed to fit a particular environment. When the environment changes, you know, when the horse is dead, remember to dismount, change the rules. Okay. What we know is that retirees are living longer. They may be experiencing financial problems due to that. People are having to downsize in their expenses and their living areas. They're going back to work. In fact, for some people, Jim, let's just go back to work because, you know, there was a time you retired and you were supposed to have this glorious retirement life. I have a hard time visualizing myself doing that. I always want to do something on radio, you know, so maybe I won't do the big grinder that you may have done earlier, but you're going to do something. And other people are the same way. Doctors, dentists go back to work. I knew one dentist who went back and began working with groups that provide dental service to low-income people that couldn't afford dentistry. So that was his way of going back to work and doing something worthwhile. And a lot of times plans don't reflect the realities of 0% rates because there's a sort of a catch-up curve that a lot of financial planners go through on this. We are basically in an era of global financial repression.
Yeah. And like it or not, John, retirees need to learn to invest in stocks. They need some kind of source of growing income to counter inflation. Now, some people that maybe are just too conservative, part of that may be working, going back, working part-time, or between both spouses, one of you is working part-time, and that's one way you solve it. But either you work longer, which means that you will draw on your assets over less of a time, you work part-time and delay drawing down those assets, but you need to incorporate some kind of inflation hedge. You don't want to find yourself in your 70s running into financial difficulties when we've run into several situations where we've seen this. And, you know, in my experience, I've been doing financial planning now for over three decades. And when you think about retirement, if you're listening to this program and you are thinking of retiring in the next 5 years, or maybe you just retired, think of your expenses loaded up on the front end and loaded up on the back end. And the one that we see most people don't plan for, John, is medical. And it's the one that comes back. We're dealing with the situation right now where the spouse, widow, lived at home, did not want to move out of her house, recently had a stroke. She was found on the floor by her son. Thank goodness her son came by, found her on the floor, unconscious, rushed her to the hospital, had a stroke. Now she's going to be forced into a situation where she has to go into a facility and be taken care of. She didn't sell her house. We're dealing with all kinds of, it really is a financial mess now as a result of this particular onslaught of having a stroke and being incapacitated.
Yeah, speaking of retirement, I'm retiring right now. Get somebody else to finish the show, okay? I'm out.
You can't do that. That's unfair.
All right. Well, here's what we're going to do then. We're going to move on to our case study, in which we usually take real life case studies. We change the names to protect the privacy of people, but show you a study that actually worked. So drum roll, brum, tsh, who's on deck this week for the case study?
All right. This is Jim and Jan Weston. Jim was age 57, Jan age 51. They basically retired early. They sold their franchise, basically a couple fast food franchise chains, and they retired early, Jim retiring at age 52. Unfortunately, it was right about the time we started going to 0% interest rates. Both of them, empty nesters, they had two daughters, now have moved out of the home. And what happened in this situation is the financial crisis disrupted their retirement plans with ZIRP, because like anybody, you sell your business, you're looking for a secure source of income. Most of what they had, they put into bond funds. And, you know, the thing that really took them by surprise is what happened to interest rates. And I don't need to tell anybody that's been in a bond fund, or, you know, maybe you had your money at a bank, or you were in treasury bills or treasury notes. You know what's happened to interest rates. This is what happened to Jim and Jan.
Yeah, you have to think of financial crises, housing bust, zero interest rates, disrupted a lot of investors' retirement plans. Okay, how did this impact everything that we went through here that I just cited? How did it impact the Westons' financial planning?
Well, I mean, the main impact was the loss of income due to the drop in interest rates. I mean, you know, when they started out, they were getting 5% on their cash and bonds. They're getting half of that when they came to us. So there was a major, major impact. And of course, anybody listening to the show, I don't need to tell you, you know, what are you getting on your money market funds? Zip, zero. You know, what are you getting on bank CDs? What are you getting in bond funds? And what has happened to that income over 5 years? So the main impact was due to the drop in interest rates.
What was their financial situation? What, going back to work, starting a business, any other options that they were considering?
They really didn't want to go back to work. And it's like anybody that's retired. I mean, if you've been retired for 5 years, you're going to want to go back to work. And they also, you know, since they owned a fast food franchise, they owned a couple of them, they didn't want to risk their capital and start another business. I mean, they were enjoying travel. They were enjoying golf. They basically didn't want to go back. Anybody running your own business, you know, the long hours that you put in to run your own business. You're retired for 5 years. You're used to, you know, taking trips. You play golf during the week. Do you really want to go back to a 60-hour work week grind or more? And that was their main concern. They didn't want to go back to work.
Okay, well, what was the financial situation?
On the asset side, I mean, this is going to sound, when you take a look at this, they had enough assets. Assets weren't the problem. What was really the issue here is how the assets were deployed was the major issue. Now, fortunate for both Jim and Jan, they were both debt-free. They had a house that was roughly close to 4,000 square feet and $1.3 million in value, no mortgage. They were debt-free, owned absolutely no debt, so that was kind of nice. Investments, roughly about $3 million in bond funds. They had almost $100,000 in a jumbo CD. They had roughly $400,000 between them in IRA rollovers. That mainly was the 401k plan they had with their business. And they had a Big Bear vacation condo because they like to go up and ski. That's one of the things about California that's really nice, is you've got almost anything you want. And you can be on the ocean, you can be in the desert, or you could be in the hills or a ski slope in California, because we've got a broad range of climate in this state, but basically temperate climate. So the concerns over the last years was the drop in interest rates, and also given basically Jan's age, her being 51, and the number of years they were going to spend in retirement. Their expenses were roughly about $8,000 a month, running about $100,000 a year, depending how many trips they took. That was the big one. It could be anywhere from $20,000 to $25,000, depending on the trips. And they'd seen no growth in income. They've seen the opposite. The other issue that we saw here was they had nearly one-third of their net worth was in real estate. So that's a big issue, because when you have one-third of your assets in real estate, it's not producing income. It would be one thing if it was rental real estate paid for and was generating an income stream.
You know, Jim, I remember when I got one of my first big jobs, I was making $12,000 a year to start, and I was in hog heaven. I thought that was great. It shows you how the value of the dollar has fallen that far. And when you talk about someone having a net worth of $5 million, it's hard to think of a problem there, especially when you read about, say, for example, Hollywood types that get into these horrible debt problems. And I keep thinking, how do you do that? You know, you must be doing something far beyond your means, and you don't really need it. You don't need all of that to live on. But the big issue here, I think, is not just the total net worth, but the years in retirement. That seems to be the counter for everything. If you have longer life expectancy, then your assets are going to have to perform for a longer period, and you may have ramped up expenses, as you were talking about, from a healthcare standpoint. More years of drawdown from this. How are you going to solve this problem, which is really a new emergent problem? It's rather recent, given all the environment things we've talked about.
Yeah, and you just made a comment. How can anybody with $5 million net worth have a problem? But, you know, I've illustrated this a number of times I hear on the program. If you had your money in two-year treasury notes back in, let's say, 2000, $540,000 would have generated $3,000 a month income. You have your money in two-year treasury notes today, it's going to take $6 to $7 million to generate that same amount of income. So you're right, John, $1 million doesn't buy you the income it used to. So in solving this problem, one of the first issues we had to look at is they had a house that was close to 4,000 feet. Both their daughters had moved, gone through college, both of them married. So they didn't need the big house, and they agreed on that. That was something they were looking at anyway or were thinking of. The second thing is, you know, you like to ski, but do you really need to own a free and clear condo in Big Bear if you're skiing maybe 5-6 times a year? Originally, Jim said that the idea was this was going to be an investment. Unfortunately, they bought it at the peak of the market, and as a real estate investment, it really didn't turn out well. Even after the recovery, they're barely breaking even. So one of the things that we suggested, and they were already leaning in that direction anyway, is look, daughters have moved out of the house. Do you really need that big of a house? Wouldn't it be better if you downsize to a smaller house, free up some of that capital? And also, we suggested selling the Big Bear home. That was supposed to be sort of for entertainment, a second home, if it allows them, because they like to ski as well. But, you know, the other thing is, you really can't afford it in this kind of environment. And that's a lot of money to be tied up in a real estate asset that isn't producing income. The other thing is, we basically said, look, you know, Jim, you're 57. Jan is 51. Number one, she's 6 years younger than you, and she has a life expectancy 5 years longer than yours. So, you know, this income is going to have to last a longer period of time. And given the fact that you retired earlier, you're drawing on your assets. You need to have something that is going to go up. So selling the home wasn't an issue, and going to a smaller home. What happened is we ended up selling the condo in Big Bear and got a little less than expected and a little less expected on the house. They netted about $1.2 million on the house and about $400,000 after commissions and expenses on the condo. The net effect was they purchased a new home right near a golf course, close to $700,000. They needed a lot of upgrading with cabinets and appliances and things like that. So they did about $50,000 worth of upgrades. It was about $750,000. But here's the important thing. It freed up $850,000 for investments. So we now had a portfolio that was roughly a little over $4 million, $4.25 million, of which we put 30% in laddered bonds at 3%. That produced roughly about a little over $37,000 of income a year. And then we created what we call our stock bond-like portfolio. It was a portfolio of dividend-paying stocks, roughly about $3 million, with a yield of 3.7%. That produced about 111. So total income went to 148,000. But the idea was we were not going to touch the IRA. So that was roughly, we'd have to back out about 15,000. We were going to let that IRA grow until age 70 and a half. And that was going to be a self-funded sort of medical expenses, or if either one of them had to go into a retirement home. Now, what we did is we put 20% of the portfolio in utilities. That was about 4% with roughly a 4-5% increase in dividends, 30% in consumer staples. So 50% of the portfolio was in very predictable, safe type things. The other remaining was divided roughly 10% in industrial stocks at 3%, energy at 4%, master limited partnerships at 5%, REITs at 5%, and technology at 3%. The end result was the total yield on the portfolio was 3.7%. They now, John, had enough income through restructuring of real estate, downsizing, getting rid of the vacation home, which really didn't make a lot of sense to tie up that much capital for something you use 5 or 6 times a year. It didn't turn out to be the great investment they thought it was going to be. And now their income was more in line to handle future income needs without taking a lot of undue risk, and also freed up more money for travel.
You know, Jim, what's interesting about this, if you look at the overall theory here, it's pretty simple. They had the assets either in real estate or bonds, but in order to achieve the goals, all you had to do was restructure where those assets were placed. And one of the great ideas was the IRA, because that would take care of their healthcare situation. So assets were there, just restructuring, and they were able to achieve goals. Coming up next, Yolanda York from Social Security Administration. What should women know about Social Security? Why would that be different from men? Well, we'll find out as lifetime income continues at financialsense.com.
You're listening to the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. To speak to Jim Poplava or his lifetime income specialists, call us toll free at 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. We'd be glad to help you plan your customized retirement portfolio.
For many Americans, Social Security plays a major part of their retirement plan. And especially in an environment with low interest rates, the decisions you make on Social Security could have a major impact on your retirement. Joining us from the Department of Social Security in San Diego is Yolanda York. And Yolanda, why don't we start out with some of the changes that went into effect for 2015 for our listeners?
Well, there's a couple of things that people really should be kept abreast. And I do want to highlight, you'll hear this information on the radio, but visiting our website, socialsecurity.gov, will give you all the new updates that we have, which is the cost of living 1.7. The Medicare premium remained the same at $104.40 for the Medicare Part B. But what is really new today, you know, there's going to be millions of taxpayers who will be gathering forms to do their federal and state local taxes. And Social Security always sends these individuals 1099 so they can do their taxes. But as of this month, individuals, if they misplaced it, lost their 1099, or never received it, they can go online to our socialsecurity.gov website and request the 1099 and have this information at your fingertips.
Well, that's good, especially as people get ready to file their tax return. Yolanda, let's talk about the base at which Social Security tax is assessed has gone up this year. What's that limit? I think it's $118,500. Would that be correct?
That's exactly right, yes. So after this, Social Security no longer taxes your FICA taxes. So the limit is at $118,500.
But you do pay Medicare tax, is that correct, above that amount?
Oh, yes. So the Medicare tax does continue to be unlimited, and those taxes do continue.
Okay. Now, let's say that this year, let's talk about full retirement benefits, because this fact alone continues to surprise people. I had an individual that was working that was age 67, and when he came in, we were doing a financial plan for him. I told him, I said, why aren't you getting your Social Security benefits? And he said, well, I don't want to lose it because I'm working. And the good news was, I told him, I said, You know, at age 66, you can take full Social Security benefits and not be penalized. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, Jim, I'm so glad you're bringing that up because I do find out the same information from individuals. When you become full retirement age, and checking full retirement age is different for everyone, but most people, if you're born between 1943 and 1954, full retirement age is 60. So at 60, you can earn unlimited earnings and continue to get all of your Social Security checks. If you retire at 62, there is an allowable that you can earn, and it's up to $15,000, some change. And so after that, we hold $1 for every two, and that's between 62 and full retirement age. And the month you attain full retirement age, then again, it's unlimited earnings. And, you know, you do have a lot of doctors, nurses, you know, anyone really in the field that they may decide they want to start collecting their benefits at 70 because, again, if somebody doesn't choose to take their Social Security at full retirement and wait till 70, then they get an additional 8% more per year for every year they delayed their retirement earnings. But what individuals, and I'm just going to highlight, we have a fantastic publication. It's called What Every Woman Should Know. Highly recommend individuals get this publication, and you want to read page 13 and 14 because it helps you maximize your Social Security benefit. And I'll share an example. I have a woman 2 weeks ago. She's a nurse. She's full retirement age. But she said to me, no, Yolanda, I want to continue till 70 and get 132% because, again, you will earn 8% more per year if you don't take your benefits at 66. And I said, but Sharon, I know your husband's retired, and, you know, her husband happens to be 72 years of age. He's getting 100% of his benefits, actually $2,300 a month. And I said to her, Sharon, do you know that because you're full retirement age, you could now get 50% from what your husband is drawing? He gets his full $2,300, and she can get 50% because she's basically going to file claim now under as a spouse, get 50%, and she'll get 48 months of 50% benefit. And when she becomes 70, she's going to cancel those spousal benefits and then get 132% of her own benefits. She was so shocked that she could do that. But these are the things that you sort of learn when you, you know, come into our website, learn what we have to share for you and ways to maximize benefits.
And the name of that document on the site, Yolanda, is What Every Woman Should Know, and that what you're talking about there specifically are pages 13 and 14?
Yes, that kind of gives you the insights of this little scenario.
Aren't there some pitfalls sometimes when you claim the spousal benefit before your full retirement age?
If you are full retirement age, there is no penalty. If you were to take it at 62, then that's a whole different matter. If you take a reduction, you will always have a reduction because, first of all, you need to claim your own Social Security before you go and get yourself entitled on a spousal benefit. And that's the only difference.
What are some of the common pitfalls that you see? I mean, one that I see is they take their benefits too early, or the situation you just mentioned where you can have part of your spouse's Social Security benefit at full retirement and allow years to accumulate to age 70, that's growing at 8%. Yolanda, I don't know too many investments that grow steadily at 8% a year guaranteed.
I don't either. And this is why people really should consider very carefully. And that is probably the thing that we see the most, people taking their benefits when they perhaps should have waited on their own record till full retirement age or waited till 70, or really analyzing. And this is the way you do this. Anyone listening today, just go to our website, socialsecurity.gov. Use our retirement estimators. Make sure, first of all, you get a My Social Security account so you can see what your benefits would be today at 62 or at 70. And then you can figure out, well, if I'm 66, maybe I'll take it from my spouse, or even better, if you've ever been married to anyone else and now you are, let's say, divorced, but you had a 10-year marriage duration, you can also pick and choose who would be the higher benefit to receive your Social Security if you're currently unmarried. So you have options.
those are some of the options. What are some of the other pitfalls or shortcomings that people have? Because, you know, if you go to your website, you read the publications, you have everything from estimating your Social Security. And as you just mentioned, you can apply different option scenarios. What if I wait to age 66 to take my benefits? What would my spouse get? What if I wait to age 70, continue to work? These are the kind of things that become very valuable tools, and you provide them.
We do, and they're for free. So you can come to Social Security. And I think, Jim, really what helps all of us is when we've heard that, well, it sounded like I could do this. The fact that you even bring this as a question to Social Security, and let's say you call our 1-800 number, which is 772-1213, and say, well, I heard that there's ways to maximize my benefits, and perhaps I need to inquire on my spouse or on my previous spouses, and I want to give you the Social Security numbers so you can tell me what would be the best thing. But you will have the answer when you go to our calculator and you sort of start to do this comparison. And if you don't have the Social Security numbers for your former spouses, good news, we can find them for you. So, but all you have to do is ask, and, you know, we can help you. I mean, you know, Social Security is about making sure that if there's any benefits out there, we want to make sure that they're paid to you properly on whatever record you may be entitled to.
You know, one thing I want to talk about here, and that is when you become eligible for Social Security. Let's just take a situation, Yolanda, I'm going to turn 66 this year. No, I'm not. But in this example, I'm going to turn 66. I want to file for Social Security. So many people are used to going into, you know, a Social Security office, getting an appointment. Let's talk about, you've designed your website to make it easy, easy steps to get qualified and set up. Let's talk about how easy that is, because this makes it so much easier than trying to make an appointment, go down, wait in line, and you can do it online and get it done in 15 minutes.
Absolutely. And it's all going to socialsecurity.gov. The only thing you need to know is that when you get ready to apply for your Social Security benefits, go to our website online 3 months before you want to start collecting your benefits. And if you miss the 3 month mark, that's fine. You know, you could do it even within a week of becoming eligible for your benefits. But it's so easy to file your benefits online. And, you know, if you come into a local office, the office hours have changed quite a bit. And just want to let your listeners know, on Wednesdays, all Social Security offices across the country, we close at 12 o'clock. The employees stay there to adjudicate claims, but obviously we're close to the public. And, you know, there's no need to really wait in line when you can actually file for your benefits. The money goes directly to your bank account. If you're born in this country, we probably already have your birth certificate, so you don't need to show any document. If you were in the military service, the application online will ask, you know, what branch and your dates of active duty. We will give you credit for that. If we can't find it, then we might ask you for your DD-214. But everything has been streamlined to make things easy for individuals. We have 10,000 people, Jim, becoming 62 a day. And this is why it's so important that people just know that filing online, whether it's for Medicare, and we should also talk about Medicare, that people can file for Medicare at 65, when you become 65 online, and that application actually takes 12 minutes to complete and get you your Medicare card online.
Can you explain the three-month process before you turn, let's say, full Social Security benefit age, which would be 66 for most people right now applying? Does it take 3 months to get you in the system, you know, like set it up so there's direct payment to your bank account?
It literally can take us up to 3 days, I would say, to file a claim online. But we say to file 3 months before you want to start collecting benefits in case there is a problem. Let's say you have a person who was born in a home, there's no birth certificate, or you have someone who was born in a different country and there is no birth certificate. Some people may have issues where it's probably going to take 3 months to find the documents if Social Security doesn't have them. And that's the general recommendation that we've always said. Just do it 3 months before you want to start collecting. But again, in most cases, we can file a claim today, and in the next 2-3 days, it's processed the money goes right into your bank account. We are efficient. We just give you a heads up in case you have a problem with the claim, then we want to give you ample time so there is no delay in getting that check to your bank on time.
I want to talk about a situation that we run into more and more today. You may have widows that are out there who, let's say, are at a younger age than their husband that passed away. You have today divorced women, second marriages, or women that are single. What are the important things that they should know in considering Social Security payments for themselves when you're moving into, let's say, a second marriage situation?
Well, if you do have a second marriage and you remarry, here's the number, the magic number. If you remarry after age 60, you're okay. You can now collect benefits on your current spouse if the benefit will be higher. Of course, you have to be married for at least a year to receive benefits on your new spouse if the benefit could be higher. Or if you were getting widow's benefits, you don't lose your widow's benefits if you remarry after age 60. So the key thing is, if you are an unmarried individual or remarry after 60, you can claim on any possible former spouse, divorce, widow, and that goes to whether you're a man or a woman or same-sex marriage. Those benefits are out there for them.
So the key here at, let's say, age 60, you're thinking of getting remarried. Do you have a choice between, let's say, your former husband or your new husband?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. So if you remarry after 60, you have a choice to decide which benefit would pay you the highest.
And the requirement for, let's say, remarrying, let's say, to your new husband is you must be married 1 year before you claim those benefits, let's say, if they're higher?
Yes.
Are there any other things that individuals should be aware of in terms of, you know, we talked about, if you wait to age 66, you get full retirement benefits and you can continue to work. We talked about another key age, age 60, especially for women who are considering remarried. That's the key date. Are there any other key ages that apply to Social Security in terms of receiving benefits?
Well, I think I want to address that to everyone that even has a Social Security number and is now working. And the highlight of even knowing what will your benefit be in the future is getting this My Social Security and making sure, because Social Security takes a high 35 years of your lifetime earnings. We apply a formula, and this is how we determine your monthly benefits. So you need to be very vigilant as the individual that you're working and your Social Security wages are correctly posted to your record. And you go onto My Social Security and make sure of that, especially women. Sometimes they change their name or get a divorce. They don't let Social Security know. Sometimes your employer just makes a mistake and doesn't report the earnings. So it's up to you to make sure that all your years are correctly posted. And if there is a year missing, all you have to do is bring us your W-2 or your last pay stub that shows that you actually had this week, and we will correct it. And we can do that within less than 30 days. And it's important that you do it today because, you know, maybe 20 years down the road and this document is now missing, well, it's going to be pretty hard to give you credit for this information for this year. And that's really what composes what your monthly benefit is. I think that's the most important thing because, you know, one thing is, am I getting paid correctly? The second thing is, what record should I claim from? My own, my current spouse, or any former spouses out there? And this is where people sometimes make the mistake of not understanding, well, did I check my record? No. And do I want to just take it at 62 on my own benefit? You know, we just need to think twice and really get the feel of what can Social Security do for you? And we have the tools out for the public so they can stay informed.
And Yolanda, let's talk about how easy the site is to navigate, because sometimes people aren't tech savvy or, you know, you can go to some websites and it takes you a while to navigate your way through the site. The most important things I would think for our listeners would be, number one, signing up for Social Security if you're at that age. Number two, if you're planning for retirement, you know, looking up your Social Security earnings or having an idea of what your estimated payments will be at retirement. I think that would be a valuable source. We just talked about if you are a single woman and you're thinking of getting remarried, some of the important things you need to know. Are there similar booklets? You have one called What Every Woman Needs to Know. Is there one for men?
Oh, of course. Of course. But I would say What Every Woman Should Know is the book that a woman should read to their spouse, because then we get it. But here's another one. My second favorite one is called Understanding the Benefits. And this one really covers everything that someone would need to know, because, you know, most of us think we'll get Social Security retirement when I become 66 or 67 or 70. But, you know, Jim, sometimes things happen. And if you become disabled today, well, you could get 100% of your Social Security disability benefits today, whether you're 22 or 27 or 57. I mean, you would now get 100% of whatever you would have gotten at full retirement. So this is why it's important that people focus on the earnings that are accumulated on their record. And by opening this My Social Security account, you can see your hard work, how it's going to be paid off, like with these benefit quotes.
The other thing, too, I think this is really important, especially for individuals that either have deferred compensation payments or looking at a source of income that they don't need right now. Let's say that one spouse doesn't need the Social Security payment because of the income stream coming in. What could be a very valuable tool, as you pointed out, Yolanda, is the 8% growth rate from full retirement age to age 70 for many can substantially increase their Social Security benefits that can come into play at a time as we get into our 70s. We know that we have more medical expenses. We're dealing with more medical issues as you age. That extra payment or the extra amount coming in monthly can really become helpful.
Yes, it is.
And a couple other items I'd like to talk about is there a book out there, or you talked about two, Understanding the Benefits. That should be read by everybody so they understand where it comes into play. Does it cover some of the things that we just talked about, Yolanda, about, let's say, waiting to age 60, how that changes, or waiting to age 66, the key dates within Social Security?
The one thing that you're going to get the best information is creating a My Social Security account. I think because when you see the numbers that it quotes you, your 62 benefit amount versus your 70 benefit amount, or you use our retirement estimators, and let's say you decide, okay, I'm going to stop working today. I'm 57 years of age. What will my benefits be when I'm 70? When you know these solid numbers, that makes all the difference. I mean, you really don't need to have it explain more than seeing, oh, well, maybe I'm better off waiting until 70. So the My Social Security gives you that information. And that information for anyone, you can create an account if you have an email and you're at least 18 years of age. I highly recommend that everybody starts paying attention to what they're putting into Social Security.
And, you know, this is very important, too, especially for young people starting out, because usually a young couple, Yolanda, they might be bringing in student loan debt into the marriage. They may have priorities, for example, paying off debt, maybe saving for a down payment on a home. And for many of them, you know, when you're young and you're in your 20s and you're thinking, oh, you know, Social Security age 66, that's 40 years away. I'm not even thinking about it. But let's talk about young people, what they should know about their benefits so that they can at least feel like, well, maybe I'm not putting too much money away for retirement yet, but this is what I, based on my wages, could look forward to when I retire.
And it's a fabulous tool for a 22-year-old to realize, okay, I'm paying this kind of money into Social Security. And if that individual, this 22-year-old, realizes what their benefit's going to be at 67, and they see that it's not a whole lot, then you hire yourself a financial advisor, because we need to be educated. A young individual really needs to open their eyes that Social Security is not enough to live on. It's really up to that individual. And it's up to all of us to plan for our future and make sure we take care of ourselves. So this is why it highlights someone looking at this number and thinking, okay, well, $1,200 a month when I become 67, you know, 50 years out, that's not enough. This is when you plan. And also, if you do become disabled, what is my disability benefit today as a 22-year-old? So many valuable tools that you can find on our website.
Well, we've got a couple of things. As we conclude here, Yolanda, give out the website and also the phone number, because these are keys. And I would encourage our listeners to really go to the site, download the two articles that we talked about, What Every Woman Should Know, and especially pages 13 and 14. And the other document is called Understanding the Benefits. And those two documents are going to give you a good idea about Social Security.
Yes, so it's www.socialsecurity.gov for government. And our phone number, 1-800-772-1213. And you can find that number available from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday. And we are ready to assist. We are ready to answer any questions that you have. That's really what we want, people to be very well educated and informed about Social Security and, most important, what's in it for you.
Well, very good, Yolanda. I appreciate you joining us on the program. And once again, if you're an individual listening to this program and you're going to be 66 this year, or maybe you've been working and you're over age 66 and you're not getting your Social Security benefits, do yourself a favor. Go visit that website and download these two programs so you can become better informed about making those major decisions. Yolanda, thanks so much for joining us on the program. As always, we appreciate the update.
Jim, thank you so much. Appreciate it as well. Have a good day.
That concludes my interview with Yolanda York. And folks, please, please, I am making an appeal to you. Do yourself a favor. If you're going to turn 66 this year, register online 3 months before you get your benefits. And do yourself a favor. Go to the site. I don't care what age you are. You can be retired and not getting benefits or getting close to benefits, or you can be a single woman. Maybe you're widowed. Maybe you are a single woman raising a family and you're thinking about this. Go download those documents, read them so you can make better choices. I have seen so many individuals make the wrong decision when it comes to Social Security in terms of taking payments. And had an individual that took his payments early instead of waiting to age 66. It would have been a substantial difference. He ended up losing a job, then going back to work, and then losing part of his Social Security benefits. There are so many mistakes that are made here that can be avoided. And I think you're going to be surprised to find the benefits and the alternatives. For example, taking, let's say you're married to a spouse and that spouse is age 66, you can get half of that spouse's benefit for Social Security and not take your own and allow yours to accumulate to age 70 and get over 130% of your benefits at age 70. These are just the kind of things that are so important today in a low interest rate environment. That extra money you get from Social Security can go a long way of making a difference in your retirement. Well, that concludes this week's program. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.